Good evening, one and all. I know. Here we go, over halfway through July. Really going quickly, but haven't we had some heat yet? Yeah, well, not as bad as they have in Europe. And in England, it's been well over 100 in England the last few days. And of course, in Europe, it's a similar sort of thing. Lots of fires going on. And you know, people say about the weather, oh, it rains all the time in England. No, it doesn't. Not for about the last 25, 30 years. In the south of England, I can tell you that out of the last 25 years, we've had 20 years of drought conditions with hose pipe bans and stuff like that. But here in Connecticut, I am not, you know, it's not too bad. It's got a bit humid a couple of days, but not too bad. And it did rain yesterday. So it means I haven't got to water the garden for a couple of days. I didn't ask my guest today because I think she's in Texas, or she was in Texas. Is she still in Texas? I think she's still in Texas. Anyway, I better. Oh no, she doesn't. She lives in Kentucky now. I just read it. She lives in Kentucky. Well, I know a little bit about Kentucky. It's green and you've got horses. Actually, no. My eldest son's wife came from, first wife, has she got a second, no, third, his what, ex-wife came from Kentucky, so yes, I know a little bit about that, but that's it. Anyway, I am here, and so is she. I was going to do the intro about what the book she's written about, but I'll wait until I introduce her, because on the show today, I have the one and only Sue McCullough. Hi Sue, how you doing?
Tried.
You, yeah, I could be better, but nobody cares.
I'll tell you how I'm really doing, but nobody cares. That's
no,
true.
I know. This is it. It's like, how are you? Nobody listens, so why should I? I mean, my wife and I are just 70 this year, and when you get to that age, as we said at the start, you know, you're this side of the ground. What more could you ask for? It's that sort of thing. Anyway, one of the things that we've had, I've noticed the last sort of couple of years in the, you know, the authors that come on and the books that have been written, apart from the increase in doctor and lawyers writing, and we obviously know that lawyers tell stories all the time after all, and doctors, now they've got laptops, people don't have to try and read their writing. And that's why there's an increase in those books. But it's a lot of people are finally sort of taking family stories that are handed down and sort of finally getting round to writing, writing that story, be it in a fictional novel or just be it like the history of this. We've had this with Japanese people in the internment camps in America. Who was it? Oh, there was the people that hid in the forests in Czechoslovakia in the war, you know, and just spent their 3 or 4 years in like a whole village hidden away in this forest and stuff like that. But you have sort of taken a similar sort of thing. You're taking sort of like some memories and childhood stories and made it into a novel. Finally, I might add, I think you were pressed a little bit to do it, weren't you?
Oh, a little bit. I started out with family stories, things that I grew up with that I remembered, but none of the grandchildren remembered because my parents, their grandparents had died before they came along. And I thought, well, there's certain things about their personalities that need to be passed on, that so they'll understand more about why they are the way they are. So I did that and just printed, had it printed and done for Christmas gifts.
Yeah.
And it went over really well. So, well, I thought, well, let's see if we can't pursue that a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that's, I grew up hearing tales of my grandfather and what a cad he was and a no good scoundrel and all that. And then I got involved in working in genealogy in the family history, which is no mean trick when your name is Jones. You know?
Second after Smith, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, just a few, Joe. Do you know that one gets me sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
I meet people and, you know, they say, oh, you're from England. You know, do you know the Jones family? I mean, yeah. Oh, yeah, they just live down the road. You know, I went to school with them and there's stuff. But it's got to that stage where people expect, you know, there's only like 93 million people in England after all. You know, only like about a third of the population of America living in the size of Ohio, sort of thing. And but everybody's, oh, do you know this family? Do you know this? You know, oh, yeah, I really do.
Yeah, but so I got a little bit of that when I moved to Kentucky. But oh, you're from Texas? Do you know so and so?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
They lived about 400 miles down the road.
Oh yeah, neighbor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when you're not the first person who sort of started off by writing it like as a family keepsake. I think there's a couple of people I definitely can remember done the same sort of thing. You know, taking the stories and produced it into the book. Now, when you were gathering the information, obviously, as you said, you had this impression of the family and the people and stuff like that. When you were gathering it and starting to write it down, did it surprise you? That were there sort of shocks that you came across that you didn't even realize had happened?
Well, lots of the stories, most of the events that I documented or wrote about were stories from my Aunt Veda, who was the only one of the children that remembered their father, my grandfather.
Uh-huh.
And so I just took what she gave me and ran with it. So there's a whole lot of fiction involved in this family tale.
Right.
But the big shock came when I found, I decided that I was going to, he abandoned the family is what he did. Nobody knew why or whatever happened to him. So I decided that based on the time frame, I was going to have him join the army and get killed.
Uh-huh.
I was going to kill him in the war. So that's what I wrote and started doing a little bit of research, trying to find out if he did actually enlist. And I did find where he enlisted.
Right.
So kept.
And this is the First World War.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. First World War.
He abandoned the family in 1915.
Okay.
When my dad was 5. So I found where he enlisted and he got sent away to Europe to the war. And so I started digging more. I ran across a genealogy site that had burial records.
Uh-huh.
So I started digging in these burial records and I found him.
Wow.
Found out that he actually did join the army. He went to war and he was killed in France. He's buried in France.
Okay.
Yeah,
now that's interesting because I know one of my nieces took my mother across to France to see my grandfather won the military medal for saving an officer under fire and stuff like that. But two of his friends were killed in the same incident trying to save the person, and I know. My niece had sort of found this, like you have, she'd found where these people were buried and took them across, took her across to this, you know, to the grave to see where these other two people, not part of the family or anything, it's just that they were part of the incident that happened. But
Right. A
lot of people, as I said at the beginning, people are sort of starting to look into what happened to family and that, and I know, you know, my niece, well, what was she now, 25 she is, you know, she'd done all this on of her own back. I mean, she's a teacher, she'd done all this investigation off her own back and everything, and she, you know, she's managed to, we were always given bits. I had his medals and the letter of thank you from the lieutenant captain he saved, and you know, my sister had this and my other sister had that. So my niece has now got them all together and made them into, you know, a little presentation thing. But it amazes me that there is this, while a lot of people forget a lot of things and a lot of people don't want to know a lot of things or that sort of thing, there are people who are still concerned and interested, like yourself doing the genealogy and that. in their family, in what happened to their family and everything like that. And this stuff needs to be, like you've done, needs to be shared and needs to be brought out there. When you said you sort of gave it out as a gift, sort of like a Christmas gift and stuff like that, what did mm-hmm. the family think at that time? Were they sort of amazed, or, you know, that this is this, and I'd heard a story about this and everything. So what reception did you get?
Oh, they were just beyond being excited. I was shocked at their reception. I wrote it for my nephews and my niece, uh-huh. and I gave a copy to a couple of real close friends that knew my mother and my brother. I have one brother left, and he got a copy. So they were all just beside themselves with it. My only niece and her brother, they took their copies, and they sat up all night. Christmas Eve, and reading it.
Uh-huh. Nice.
And
it's ideal to learn about it on Christmas Eve, you know, Christmas Day. Is that you feel it in a way, I guess that might have even brought them closer and that. Let's tell everybody, of course, I forgot, I haven't done it, but the book is called Leave the Light On.
Leave the Lamp On.
You know, I'm mm-hmm. looking at it, and the eyes are working, but the brain's not. There's a link missing there. Leave the lamp on. Okay. I said it as well. You got some not so gentle encouragement to finish this.
Yes, I had an eighth grade English teacher. Her name was Lottie Waterman. I'm sure she's dead and gone now, because she was 100 years old when I was in the eighth grade. She had to have been. Anyway, she was one of those school teachers that you just despised, because she demanded the best out of you. And she set rules. I learned rules of grammar and structure from her that has stood me well all throughout my working career, which I worked before retirement. I've been retired 10 years now, mm-hmm. but I spent my life in working, developing documents and corporate material, mm-hmm. Reading the introduction would put you into a coma really fast.
Right.
That kind of material.
Oh, great. Yeah.
But Lottie Waterman's teaching and training stood me well during those years. And she stood me well when I helped my husband when he finished his master's degree uh-huh. at Texas A&M, which is no small slouch.
No, not at all.
So her training really, really was fundamental. So, yes, I had some not so pleasant encouragement there. But one of my relatives questioned whether or not this book should be written because of the stories we grew up on about our sorry grandfather. You know, he was just no good. And I never believed of this of anybody.
Right.
There's two sides to every story.
Yep.
And I believe every person has a story, and it deserves to be told. And I think that becomes part of their legacy.
Indeed. And I totally agree.
My Aunt Beta is the one that shed some positive light on him, because she could remember him. She knew that he tried to come back and support the family, and that their mother wouldn't allow him back.
Right.
No.
And that's where the title comes from. You know, leave the lamp on. In other words, I'll be coming back, sort of thing.
Yeah, that's right. And he had written one letter while he was away in the military, in the army. He had written to her that he was sorry for the pain he caused her, and so on and so forth. And he hoped to see her again as soon as he got out of the war. Well, he didn't get out of the war. He got killed. Mm. And when he was prepared for burial, they found a letter in his pocket mm-hmm. that was he had gotten back from her, and it was returned to her. When she died in 1952, they found that same letter tucked in her dress, and it said, "Leave the lamp on."
Oh,
that's all it said.
Oh, crikey. And that's where you got the title from. And of course, I mean, I know, obviously, because, you know, we were growing up, my family made us sit and watch programs like World of War on BBC and stuff like that to know what had happened in, well, in that case, it was the Second World War, but we also know about the First World War. And the sort of time that he was in the army in France. I mean, this is like the time of the Somme, which was basically trench warfare where you just sort of moved 2 inches, lost a load of 1,000 people, and then lost it the next day. And it was a swamp, you know, with trenches. And then, of course, you had the gas coming over, and you know, you were just walking out there to be shot by machine guns. You know, the people just didn't know about the sort of things like that in those days. And a lot, you know, it affected people mentally, terribly mentally. And oh, yeah. You don't know what effects that, you know, it had on somebody about not even wanting to come back, that their mind had gone, basically. And they were worried about how the state they are in with the nerves and everything like that could affect their loved ones if they went home.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, the ones that came home, people back then, they didn't worry about how it affected them. They didn't think about it.
No, there was nothing like that. You know, stiff upper lip, yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It, never mind the mental effect on it. It just wasn't known. I mean, literally, it just wasn't known and even understood and things like that. And it still does. I mean, people from the last war and stuff like that, you know, the mental scars that we begin to understand a bit more now. But in the First World War, there was no such thing. You know, people just didn't know about it, didn't understand about it. You know, get some backbone in you. Come on.
Yeah, that makes me think of one of my favorite all-time baseball players, Will Clark.
Uh-huh.
His attitude about injuries and all that, which I kind of understand and like it. He was like, rub a little dirt on it and go on. You'll be fine.
That's right. Yeah. Like that was like in the Monty Python and the Holy Grail with the Black Knight, you know. Oh, I've lost an arm. Never mind. I've still got the other arm. And there goes a leg. Oh, I can hop around a bit.
That's right.
So you finished the book.
That's right.
Leave the Lamp
On. It took about 2 years.
Yeah. And then it was a case of, hey, you know, your family liked it. You said, I can do this. And you most likely, you know, trimmed it up a bit and edited it a bit and stuff like that. And then what made you finally bring it out to, you know, to share with the world? Was it sort of just the reception that you'd had, or did you think it needed to be told?
Pretty much. No, I intended when I began working on Leave the Lamp On, it was my intention to see if I could get it published.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was encouraged along the way from different family members and friends that read drafts and helped me with editing. I have one good friend that lives in New Mexico. She read my manuscript over and over and over, looking for things that didn't flow properly. She has a real good eye for that. And I'm fortunate that I have a sister-in-law who is an English professor. So I was able to get some input and help and encouragement along those ways. So I intended to do that. I hoped that it would work. So that's how it happened.
I love the one of the sort of paragraphs that you share. I think it's on Goodreads. And it just makes you want to know what happened, because Emily was startled by a knock on the door just as she sat down by the lamp with the day's needlework and darning. See, look, got the lamp in there. Dusk was settling on the pecan trees, and her daughters cleaned up the supper dishes. All she could make out was the silhouette of a uniformed soldier. Dum dum dum. Wow. I mean, it just makes you. I think you read that. And think, oh, hang on. Is he in France? Has he escaped? Did he leave? What's happened? You know, who is it? Is it somebody else? And that's the sort of paragraph that you just want to know what happened next. And that's the sort of paragraph that makes a page turner, and people want to read what happened. Now the book's out, you know, in the open market. What sort of response have you received so far?
Slow. But it's because I don't have any. I'm not a marketeer.
Right.
No, I don't know how to market. You know, it's just not something that I've ever been involved with.
Yeah.
And I don't travel well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've done a couple of book shows, you know, one here locally, here in Louisville, and one in Dallas, which we loaded up and drove to Dallas and did that. It was pretty successful. And I stumbled across a United States list of independent bookstores in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been emailing them.
Right.
And I'm beginning to get some pretty good response off of that.
Good, good. So I mean, it's the sort of subject that a lot of people are now starting to get really interested in. So I think that's great.
Yeah, I'm hoping that, you know, I'm not surprised it's taken a little while for it to pick up.
Yeah.
But, and I've begun to mention it as I've made some progress on my next book. I've got another book underway.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's about halfway done. And it's been a difficult ride. I've worked on it for over a year already, and I'm thinking that it may be even more interesting.
So. And what's this second book? Yeah, without giving too much away, obviously, what's this new book about?
I have my oldest nephew's adopted, and he grew up knowing he was adopted, but he always felt like he had family nearby, blood family,
right.
And he never did try to find them until after his parents died because he didn't want them to be hurt.
Yep, yep.
So, you know, that happens. People find their blood families and it often doesn't go well. You know, nobody wants to be involved. But he did end up finding them and it's gone very well. It's been very successful. So I'm thinking that that's a good story that needs to be told.
It is, because as you say, it's a bit of an emotional thing to, you know, well, do I want to know them? Because, and like you said, he waited until after his parents that adopted him had died, because you're torn with wanting to find the people and upsetting the people that have been your parents up until that time. It's a very emotional decision, I'm sure.
Yeah. You don't want to upset them, but then you know, you're not sure you want to find out why.
And then at the back of your mind, it's pressing you. You know, oh, should I really? You know, and you said, it'd be nice if you knew without knowing, if you know what I mean, you know.
Yeah.
I just found a piece of paper and it says, oh, they're my parents. Okay, fair enough. At least I know now. Oh, yeah, but do they remember me? Do they? And then it starts. Do they remember me? Why did they? Yeah. Why was I given away? What happened? And you're torn between sort of really, you know, upsetting the apple cart with the way it affects the family and that. It seems to me this is a sort of your niche, if you like, your genre. This sort of family type historical novel. Do you think you like getting into that and sort of investigating it and everything?
Yeah, I think so. It's one of those things I've always read that people should write about things they know.
Yeah, indeed.
Well, that kind of narrows my field down a little bit. So.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
I'd be surprised at what I don't know.
My wife says to me, you know the most stupid, weirdest things, you know, really sort of stupid, weird facts and stuff like that. You're just weird. Yeah. You just know all these stupid. I said, I know, but, you know, if I'm sort of down the bar or chatting to somebody and stuff like that, it's good to suddenly bring out this really, you know, weird statement. What was the one I heard last week? It's more funny than anything. Oh, I know what it is. The Flat Earth Society are having a global conference. Now, that blew my mind. I couldn't work that out.
Yeah.
I mean, the Flat Earth are having a global conference. No, I still can't get my mind around that.
That's the picture of an oxymoron, isn't it?
It certainly is. It certainly is. Oh, I tell you what, it certainly has been great fun chatting to you about this book. But the time is running out. So what I'm going to do now, Sue, is hand the show over to you and have you tell everybody where people can find more about you and, of course, about your book.
Well, I appreciate that. I've certainly enjoyed the time as well. Leave the Lamp On is available at pretty much every place you can think of online. Of course, Amazon, Barnes & Noble carries it. Books A Million even has it. And it's a book that's what they call print on demand. So there's not going to be a big stock on their shelves, but they can get it for you. And it takes about 2 days. There's, I know of about 30 different small independent bookstores around the country that carry it, but you can always Google it. In fact, Google Play has it available. I'm a born and raised Texan, so a lot of my stories come out of Texas. You know, so that leads you to believe they may or may not be true.
So, right.
You know, they always say you can tell a Texan, but not much.
Very true, very true. I know a lot of people like that. Well, Sue,
not everybody's real quick to admit it. Yeah.
You're right. Thank you so much for being a guest. It's been great having you. Good luck with the book and good luck with the new book. And perhaps when a new book comes out, you'll come back and chat to us again.
I'll be happy to. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed the time as well. Have a good evening.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today, Sue McCulloch, M small c, large c. So there's two c's here. M small c, large c, U-L-L-O-U-G-H, M C, large C, U-L-L-O-U-G-H. And we've been talking about her book, Leave the Lamp On. As he said, sort of like a family history, hidden stories, you know, man gone off to war, First World War, 1916, the Somme, and all that came. He came from that and basically changed the world, changed a huge amount of people's lives. Anyway, really good, lots of good feedback, lots of 5-star reviews and everything like that. So look out for it. Leave the Lamp On by Sue McCulloch. Well, that's it. I will be back tomorrow with a fresh guest. But until then, as always, we've just got one thing left to say. Don't forget.